U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
An anonymous official writes an op-ed about Donald Trump and Washington goes crazy. Plus, is Brett Kavanaugh on the way to confirmation at the Supreme Court? And another strong jobs report for August as the labor market tightens further. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot of the Wall Street Journal. And here, as usual, to join me in conversation about these subjects, Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
And our colleague, Bill McGurn. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's start with the op-ed in the New York Times by somebody who they identified as a senior official, quote unquote, no name, proclaiming himself or herself to be one of those members of the internal resistance who are protecting the country from the president of the United States they elected. And the point of the op-ed seemed to be, we are the virtuous ones. And if that's the case, you really do wonder, Kim, why didn't this person just put his name on it and resign and say, there's a problem here? Or just keep quietly working away to do what the person who wrote it said he wanted to do?
Well, either of those would have been more honorable than this anonymous op-ed. As you say, if the goal here and what you're bragging about is that you are trying to restrain President Trump from his worst impulses, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go wave a big red flag in front of him and send him off on another rampage about anonymous op-eds, which is exactly what has happened. I think the other thing, too, is there's a sort of the idea of arguing that there's this heroic resistance working secretly within the White House to restrain the president. We have plenty of the president's advisors who do that openly all the time, whether it's trying to get him to stop with sort of uninformed policy impulses on trade or travel bans or just to get him to rein in some of his comments. We know that happens. It's been well reported. So not quite sure what the news value of this is, other than perhaps this person felt the need to inflate their own ego.
Well, of course, Washington now on a mole hunt, Bill, and they're going to try to find it. Donald Trump's on one of his own mole hunts, urging the Justice Department to look in to find out who this is, which is, of course, a fool's errand. Let the press, if they can find out. But in any event, you know, a smarter Donald Trump would have just said, I think we ought to give this the credibility that you earn by not putting your name on
something. Right. Although I think he feels it plays to his base when he talks about dishonest efforts by employees in his administration or holdovers working against him. Look, I think there was great news. There was really significant news in that anonymous op-ed because it talked about Donald Trump's achievements on the economy and so forth. And I don't think those words have ever appeared in the New York Times before. Of course, it was in an effort to say the president had nothing to do with it and this guy and all the other right-thinking people had to do with it. But it is interesting. And I think, look, part of the switcheroo here is, I mean, in some sense, it's not different from any day in the West Wing where you wake up and people are wondering, who is the source for that, the anonymous source for that Washington Post story, right? It's just to a bigger degree on that. So it's the same kind of stuff, the same kind of games. The trick here is by saying a senior figure in the Trump administration, I think it creates the public impression when an ordinary Joe hears this, they think, oh, it must be a cabinet member or Vice President Pence or something. And you and I, we all know that there are like 8,000 people in the administration this could be. Because it said senior, you can define that anyway. And it said Trump administration, didn't say West Wing. It didn't even say Trump appointee. It could be a holdover. So there's kind of a big game. I mean, my view is that the story would not have any importance if the person, my guess, attached their name to it.
Yeah, that may well be the case. I suspect that this does not have lasting political importance. This will fade. It will go into the woodwork if you're inclined to think that Donald Trump is a menace to the world. This will confirm it. If not, this will. If anything, it might make a little more sympathy among people to say when they look at it and say, you know, kind of man up. You know, if you're gonna criticize like this, then say so and use your name or resign.
Right. Look, as someone that worked in a White House, there were things I had to do that I didn't agree with. Paul, I know you hold it against me that I wrote many pro-ethanol speeches, cellulosic ethanol.
I hold it against you.
Yeah, you think I'm mad, Strassel will kill you.
But, you know, you have to – I was very conscious it was a Bush administration and not the McGurn administration, right? And you have to decide in the larger thing, is the general drift, is the general thrust right? And resignation's honorable if there are things that you cannot in good conscience carry out. But if you stay, I think you owe a president a 100% effort to carry out the agenda that he campaigned and got elected on.
All right, let's turn to Brett Kavanaugh. Full week of hearings concluded this week with a lot of histrionics, a lot of campaign politicking, which we'll explain. But the ultimate question was, could Brett Kavanaugh get through this bill without making a foot fault, without giving ammunition to his opponents, so that he would emerge from the week in a position to be confirmed? Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority leader, was asked by Hugh Hewitt on his radio show today, do you have any doubt that Brett Kavanaugh will be confirmed? And McConnell said, none. Do you agree?
I agree. I think this has been clear from the outset. Look, for most Americans, they watch this as a hearing of a Supreme Court nominee. The Democrats realize he is going to get confirmed. My guess is with Democratic votes of some of these senators running in Trump states. And so for the Democrats on the committee, this was the first primary in the presidential primary in the 2020 decision. And we saw Cory Booker and Kamala Harris grandstanding.
Don't rule out Amy Klobuchar.
Right.
She's from Minnesota.
Right.
She wants to run too.
Exactly. So, you know, it's kind of a far. I think it's the price. Look, Brett Kavanaugh, in terms of putting up with the hearing, he's kind of taken more heat than other nominees just because they see him as the fifth vote on Roe. I mean, we can debate that. I'm not sure they're right on that, but that's how they see him, mm-hmm. as the fifth possible vote. So he's taken more heat, I think, than any other nominee on that list. But also, I think he's better prepared than any other nominee. In the Bush administration, he was part of the Alito and Roberts process. He's very smart. And I think we agree he didn't give them anything to go on. He just has to sit there and put up with this, you know, watch this circus go on for a few days, and then he has a lifetime appointment.
Well, that's how I see it, Bill, in terms of the politics. Though I think we can't let this pass, Kim, without some comment on the Democratic future candidates for president and the questioners. And I think one in particular deserves to be mentioned, and that's Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, who compared himself to Spartacus, the Thracian slave who led an uprising against the Roman legions, successful for a time, only to be killed.
Did not end well.
Did not end well for him, but leading to hilarious jokes with everybody saying, I'm Spartacus. No, right. No, I'm Spartacus. And even a Twitter tweet by somebody, which I thought was quite good, of showing Senator Orrin Hatch, who's, you know, well into his 80s, whispering into the ear of Chuck Grassley, the chairman of Judiciary, saying, you know, I knew Spartacus. So, I mean, what did you make of this? It was all in the service of saying, I am releasing confidential documents in order to stop this nominee and show what he really thinks about race and abortion rights, Kim.
Yeah, well, as an aside, that Cory Booker line gets my award for least believable line, because I think we can be pretty sure he'll have some more Spartacus moments on his road to the presidential nomination. He seems to like the limelight. No, this was actually a very serious breach. It was embarrassing first and foremost, because he said he was going to release confidential committee documents. Even though he seemed to be unaware that, in fact, they had been made public in the middle of the night. And so he was doing no such heroic thing. And then it was doubly embarrassing because the purpose of releasing these was to somehow suggest that the judge had some nefarious role in some sort of racial profiling, only to discover that the contents of the documents showed that the Judge Kavanaugh opposed racial profiling. So he sort of stood on ceremony unnecessarily and then didn't prove anything at all. But I think the bigger point is that he didn't realize that the documents had been made public, and he nonetheless said that he was in knowing violation of the committee rules, releasing them anyway. And, you know, that's a serious thing. I myself think he ought to get tossed off the Judiciary Committee for it. Some Republican colleagues of his who are institutionalists and were very disturbed by this have suggested that this is something that ought to be referred to the Ethics Committee. It didn't really, you know, get him anywhere.
Well, he almost begged the Ethics Committee to look into it and to punish him, which he would then carry as some kind of and play as a martyr to his supporters on the left. And I think this is an illustration of the degree to which the Democratic candidates going into 2020 are going to be competing. And there are going to be a lot of candidates like this who are going to be competing for the same slice of progressive voters, Bill.
Yeah, he might wish for Trump to have another nominee so he can grandstand again. Remember, this is the same senator that became, I think, the first sitting senator to testify against another colleague when he testified against Jeff Sessions, when Sessions was up for attorney general. You know, we can laugh at it. It's not clear to me that in today's Democratic Party that it's not effective. You know, 2 days ago, I think 13 progressive groups sent a letter to Schumer complaining about his leadership, saying he hadn't secured the no votes of all the Democrats. Even if he secured all the no votes of all the Democrats, they would still lose. So it's not clear what they want. And when you don't have the votes, you grandstand.
And what is the purpose of having every Democrat vote against a nominee in a futile gesture if those votes cost you Senate seats?
And a
majority, or push you into a bigger hole in the minority so that it's harder to win it back in 2020. So that's what is also on Chuck Schumer's mind. All right, we're talking about politics in Washington, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
You can now listen to Potomac Watch on your Amazon smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And to finish today, let's talk about the state of the economy, which turned in another good jobs report on Friday for the month of August. The jobless rate stayed at 3.9%, but 3.9%, but the economy created more than 200,000 new jobs, although June and July numbers were revised down by 50,000. So it's not a tremendous job report, but nonetheless a good one, with wages going up at a 2.9% clip month over month, which is one of the best readings in some time, Bill.
Yeah, it's. I agree with Larry Kudlow here. It's one of the great overlooked stories. And now, look, we've had the McCain funeral, the Kavanaugh hearings. All the stuff seems to be overshadowing this achievement. If you had told us 2 years ago that this is what we would have, 4% growth and the jobs, I mean, it's hard to see it getting better. The hope is that it continues and it's not thwarted by, for example, the trade initiatives.
Yeah, the wage increase year over year is a little less than advertised, because in part it's because the previous 12th month that was a weak month was thrown off. Yes. So it's a little bit of a not quite as good an increase as you might think. Although the wage tracker for the Atlanta Federal Reserve has wages increasing at a 3.2% rate, and of course there's a debate over wages and why the figures aren't going up as fast as they usually do given the tight labor market, but Kim, politically, the Republicans want to take credit for this. Is it going to matter in November?
Well, I think it matters to the extent that, look, when you take a broader look at this, this is good news for workers, right? You just mentioned the wage increase. But the other number that I thought was notable there is that new jobless claims, which are basically it's sort of a proxy for layoffs, the lowest in 50 years. And so, you know, this is a sign that companies are hiring, that the labor market's getting tighter. They're paying more wages to those that they have. And this is all good news for people who have struggled over the years to find new work because they're not only getting it, but getting paid more. To the extent that their pocketbook feels it, you know, we also have, even though the tax cut hasn't, we haven't had our first year of filing taxes under it. At the beginning of this year, people began to see a greater amount of money in their paychecks because their withholdings went down in anticipation of that tax cut. Those are the things that make people feel more optimistic. Now, if Republicans can capitalize on it, that would matter. I think one of the problems is that we're too busy chasing after the anonymous writer of the New York Times op-ed, and President Trump is pursuing that rather than really trying to beat home this economic message.
The report this week, before the jobs report for August, was productivity in the second quarter, productivity gains, that's gains in labor productivity. And those were up very healthy, almost 3% as well, which is one of the healthiest gains in some time. And that's significant because, of course, to get wage gains, you have to have productivity gains, because that's the way that improvements in the economy flow through to workers. If each worker's individual productivity improves, you are worth more to employers. And so that's a very important number, hard to measure sometimes, and we're not quite certain we do measure it correctly. But over time, it does tend to get it right. And in the 1990s, for example, we had huge productivity gains that flowed through to workers. So if we see now the economy growing faster, productivity growing faster, then wages are bound to follow.
Yeah. And look, people can argue about all the different numbers. In the most basic sense, what's happening is we have more incentives for businesses to invest and grow. Right. And they are growing and they're creating jobs. And then for workers, the best thing for workers is when there's demand for your labor. It's just like if you walked into a store. I mean, if you're buying a TV, you want five TV places selling you the TV to compete on price. If you want to get a job, you want five employers out there offering you a job. That's why this is a good time for workers. And I think it's a fact that people feel it. People are feeling more optimistic. I mean, I have only anecdotal evidence of friends I know who are out of work, or not just people out of work, people who felt trapped in their jobs, couldn't go. I think people feel and see the reality that there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Bill, are you saying that you want the New York Times and Washington Post to engage in a bidding war for your citizens?
I wouldn't mind. I don't think that day is ever going to come. So,
but it would be a golden handcuff. Right. You would hate it. You'd love working.
I once had to sign an agreement with the New York Post that I would not accept a job, an offer from the New York Times, and I thought it was actually kind of encouraging that they thought it might be a possibility.
I should point out that I looked at the Atlanta Fed website again. They have, in addition to their wage tracker, they have a GDP tracker for each of the quarter. They basically take the latest individual reports on the economic indicators. So the jobs report is one of them, but the inflation reports are another, and the manufacturing surveys are another. And they add them all up, and they have a track for GDP, and they're on track for the third quarter, which ends in 3 weeks,
right?
At the end of September, at 4.4% growth.
Wow.
So that would be the second quarter of growth above 4% if that turns out to be the case, which would be a very healthy development. All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.